Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Race, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 6, Episode 3, Sons and Daughters, teleplay by Bradley Thompson and David Weddle, and directed by Jesus Salvador Trevino. Sons and Daughters aired on October 16th, 1997.
This week on Deep Space Nine, Alexander Rodchenko joins the crew of the Rotaran, much to the disappointment of Worf. On Tarak Nor, Tor Ziyal returns to the station, where Dekat intends to use her to get closer to Major Kira.
Gross.
A lot of bad dadding this week on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I do normally enjoy my TV shows to have bad dadding, but, like, this might have been a lot for one episode.
So, we'll start this episode as we start most of our episodes. Did you or did you not remember this one, Elise?
I did not remember this.
Yeah. I remembered parts, and, like, when I saw the title, I was like, oh, it's the Klingon one in the middle of the, like, Dominion occupation
arc
on Kirk. But, like, a lot of kind of the beats or whatever, because it is so serialized and often, like, you know, you would binge it, or, like, you think of it as a whole, like, group of episodes. It's like, oh, this is this one. Oh, this is that one. Mm-hmm. But, like, sometimes it's hard to delineate which one's which. And, like, I think part of it, because for the first two, obviously we saw the Defiant crew going on the undercover mission, and then, you know, in last episode when they're, you know, they're crash landed and all of that. It's like we have continuity through the, what's it called? Through the stuff that's going on the station, but everything else in this episode just feels disconnected from everything else we've seen so far. Like, yeah, obviously the Dortaran picked up the Defiant crew and are sending them back, but yeah. It's a solid base hit.
Yeah, it's not my favorite, but it's fine.
Yeah.
I did find it funny that, like, I had forgotten that I did remember that Alexander came back. I didn't remember the circumstances, so, like, that aspect of it was somewhat familiar, even though I didn't, outright remember this episode. But I had forgotten that they age him up. And I was reading on it, and, like, it made sense because, A, it's a lot easier to work with just an adult actor for the production. But, like, I kind of felt like it looked like a completely different person, obviously, than we had seen previously.
Yeah. I'm just doing some quick math here.
Oh, yeah, please. We've
done it before started recording, but, you know, this, it makes for great podcasting when people are doing things on air, right? My God. So Alexander was born in 2366.
Yes.
And this episode takes place on or around, like, 2374. So Alexander's 8.
That's really funny. That is hysterical. But also, you know, as someone on the production team noted, we don't know how Klingons age. Maybe it's like a Kes situation. Obviously, this is pre-Kes in Voyager.
Right?
That's really funny. I am hysterical about this. I love it.
Yeah, and I'd forgotten, like, because I was like, this is why I was like, what how many years has it, like, been approximately, because like, okay, if like, like in my mind when they do like, what did Ira call it in the companion, like the soap opera aging effect or whatever, right?
Yeah,
do more with the character, like, and like, so it's like, okay, they were a teenager, now you've like done them, upgraded them to like, you know, an adult or whatever, right? Like, okay, cool. Bow ties are cool. I forgot that he was like literally a preteen. That's funny. But yeah, hey, no, let's go with it. I'm not gonna lose sleep over it. It is what it is.
Please,
but
don't
like,
lose sleep
in my
over
mind
it.
I'm like, okay, he's probably like 12 or 14, and
yeah,
so they aged him up to like 18, like, you know, he's probably like 14 or 16, but now the actor's like over 18. I get it, production, blah 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 blah, and
yeah,
sure, you can probably enlist in the Klingon Defense Force at 16 or something.
So, yeah, no, for sure.
He's 8.
So I've never seen this film, but the Alexander Wharf plot is based on the 1950 John Ford film Rio Grande. I don't know if it's Grande or Grand.
I guess Rio Grande.
Yeah. And I want to watch that movie.
Well, I know a connoisseur of classic westerns who would probably love to rewatch that with you.
They have never seen it.
I know. There you go.
We're speaking of Ryan, who has been on this podcast before. If we had more time, he probably would have watched it and joined us. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
I was really excited to see Gabrielle Union in this, who is a wonderful person.
Should have given her more lines.
Yeah, she's kind of just shouting out some stuff that's like, you know, not really that important. I think it was like related to when Alexander like misread the what was happening. And also, our friends Sisko Bashir O'Brien and Dax are literally only in one scene of this episode at the very beginning. They're on the Rotaran for like a moment, heading back to Starfleet, and I'm just like, I don't need to know why they are not, like, I forget why they're even on the Rotaran at this point.
The implication is the Rotaran is the ship that picked them up after Rocks and Shoals when Kevon brings the transmitter for O'Brien,
yes,
to repair so they can all get off.
Yeah. And this episode was actually filmed before that one, so it's kind of interesting, yeah, that it's like a little backwards. All right. So we have Sorry.
No, no, go ahead. I was just going to say, and it says in like in the Deep Space Nine Companion, Ron Moore talks about, you know, them having to kind of rewrite and losing track of like the station arc, because that's the narrative kind of like throughout. That's like the linkage of where they are with, you know, Kira and the new Resistance 2.0 and all of that. And it's like, he's like, yeah, it's really confusing to keep straight.
Yeah, I bet. So speaking of our different plots, we really have like a plot being the Worf and Alexander plot, and the B plot being the Zial plot, which is kind of funny because the episode's called Sons and Daughters, so the sons is plot A and the daughters is plot B. I do find it really funny at the beginning of this that everyone seems to know that Kira and Odo are doing like a resistance cell situation. yeah, Jake like wants in on it. Quark's like, you don't want to be involved in this. I mean, we don't really get more than that, yeah, relating to this, because it's more about, you know, Dukat bringing Zial back to Deep Space Nine from Bajor. And there's a lot of like Zial trying to make everyone friends. Still, Zial invites Kira to dinner, and then, yeah, like, after Kira agrees, Dukat's like, it's at my quarters. and Kira's like, ugh, what did I get myself into, basically. It feels to me like Zial is trying to parent trap Kira and Dukat, not necessarily in a romantic way, but, like, at least into being, like, her parents and friends. I found this plot a little frustrating. I do realize that Zial is someone that she kind of... Obviously, she knows her because of work, but she's more involved in Kira's personal life than professional life. So a lot of this episode for Kira, to me, feels like rehashing a lot of the things that she was dealing with, like, an episode or two ago, where she was deciding whether or not she was going to, you know, help, like, be part of the station council and all of that. But, like, I guess this, the difference here is that she has to make some, like, decisions for her personal life.
Yeah. Yeah.
The way that Kira talks to Zial, like, oh, you know, why'd you leave Bajor, blah, blah, blah. I can't tell if, like, Kira is being a little naive here. She, like, assumes some big thing happened to make Zial leave Bajor, as if, like, being the daughter of Gul Dukat wouldn't be enough of a reason for people to, like, not take to her.
Yeah.
I just also feel like Dukat is very manipulative here. I mean, he tells Zial and she trusts him. And he's just like, yeah, I overreacted when I left you to die last time. And I kind of just feel like Zial would probably be better off just, like, not having Dukat in her life. I don't know. Yeah. It's not for me to say.
I don't know. I mean, it feels...
I just really hate him. Like, I like him as a character, yeah. But, like, every decision he makes is, like, worse than the previous one.
Yeah, and I guess Zial doesn't know him like we do as the audience.
Right, of course. Or as Kira does, for that matter.
Yeah, no, that's... Yeah, no, fair. And I think there is probably, like you say, some naivete on, like, her part. Because, like, but remember, like, when she was rescued from the Breen prison camp, it was Dukat and Kira, like, on that joint mission
together. Yes.
Right. Yes. So, like, that's probably kind of, like, deep in her, like, psyche about it.
It's and, like, when a little kitty, like, imprints on their mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. We find out that Zial wants to be an artist and has been doing drawings, and she wants to use her art to bring the Bajorans and the Cardassians together to make them feel that they're not so different. I don't really have any feelings on this. I mean, Zial is of both, like, she is, has both parent, you know, her parentage is both Bajoran and Cardassian, so I feel like it makes sense to want to represent both of those species. I don't know how successful she'll be, but I don't need to know that.
Like, on one hand, I want to be like, oh, sweet summer child, like,
Genevieve. Yeah.
But, like, also, like, why not? Why can't art do that? Like,
yeah, you know, for sure.
And, like, and it's like that, it's like from Andor season one, like, Nemec's manifesto, it's like every little act of resistance or change pushes the line forward, right? Even however insignificant it feels. So, like, I also like okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. But this is where the plot gets gross for me. Though Dukat, you know, tells Kira how Zial's work has been accepted into the Cardassian Institute's exhibition on Cardassia. A lot of saying Cardassia in that sentence. And so he's going to, like, have a little celebration party for her. And, like, it's really clear to me that, like, Kira does not want to be involved with Dukat, but, like, also feels an obligation to Zial to support her and come to her party. It's not until Damar comes to Kira's quarters with a dress that Dukat has picked out for her. Although being delivered to her by a second person is funny. It kind of, you know, it's like that old trope from, like, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark, or like a movie, you know, where the bad guy like brings the
brings the dress to Marion.
Yeah. But like, I think that's something that comes up in a lot of things. Like, it happens in James Bond all the time, you know.
Yeah, it's like it's a trope. You're right, but like, I think it's where it works too. Like, it's ultimately about control.
Yes. Right? And it's like, can I get you creating... to show up to the party and something I picked out is me controlling
it's
control, you.
It's ownership. It's I want you to look this way, so you're going to comply.
Yeah.
And it's like often presented in, you know, like as a kind gesture, like, you know,
yes,
like how Belloc does it in Raiders.
Yeah.
But it's so loaded. Right.
Yeah, and it's also very gross because it's always like a revealing dress or like something that's very sexy. Like, I think that adds to it. And I think that, you know, the fact that the dress looked kind of satiny, it fell into that. And like, Kira is a little bit like, oh, this is so pretty at first, you know, like she does smile. Yeah. And then she's like, wait a second, like, what am I doing here? She actually said, I think she says that out loud. So she's like, the vibes are off, and she goes to return it to him, and he's pulling his nonsense about like, there's a bond between us, which is fucking gross. And then she just flat out tells him, like, I can't be involved with you at all. Like, I can't take this. I can't be like in this situation. And he's like, what about Zial? And I appreciate that Kira's like, Zial will get over it. I think that in this moment, it's better for Kira to be concerned about herself. But I really fucking hate when he calls her Nerys. You are not friends. Like, you can't... Bajoran's first names are so informal that, like, only certain people are allowed to say that to you. And Gul Dukat... Yeah. is not on Kira's list of people that can call her Nerys.
Yeah. We also, I guess, just circle the idea of, like, you know, the villain coercing and redressing a female character or a femme character. We missed one of the most famous examples in the history of film and television. Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. That might be one of the more egregious versions of this.
But hey, she also uses the chain. Leia uses the chain to strangle him to
death.
Choke a motherfucker. So, you know. That's one of my favorite kind of like rebranding things of like the modern era of like... classic Star Wars, where it's like the so-called, like, air quotes, slave Leia outfit to like Hutt Slayer. I just appreciate that.
I love the Hutt Slayer.
Oh.
After not going to the party, Kira like runs into Zial and just kind of tells her what's what. Like, I can't be involved with your dad. I'm sorry. And Zial, she basically is just like, oh, that's, you know, I can't choose between you. And I appreciate that Kira's like, you don't have to. Like, he's your dad. You'll choose him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, exactly. That wasn't the best. Because it did feel like a retread a little bit for me. But just adding Zial into the mix. So, it's like a little bit about personal life.
And I guess it's worth mentioning, too, like you say, how folks seem to know what's going on between our heroes on the station. That Jake kind of was like, hey, I want in on the resistance. And Odo and Kira, like, no, you don't. And then Quark's like, you won't. I need a new waiter. It's pretty
That funny. Was so funny. I forgot about that. If you're looking for something to do. So the main plot here is Alexander and Worf, but we start off at the beginning of that episode with Dax being so bratty. she jokes that she won't join House Martok when she and Worf marry because it's so boring to follow all of those blood feud vengeances. And it's really clear to me that she's like excited for that life. Like she's like, yes, I want, like she wants to be in it. It's really cute. I also really love the friendship that Martok and Sisko have kind of established. Because they're both captains, I think that they have a camaraderie, you know, because they talk, they can talk to each other in a way they can't talk to anyone else because they like have some of the same pressures on them. And, Sisko bets Martok that he'll step foot on Deep Space Nine before him. And it's just really cute. Like, they're like, oh, well, we'll, you know, basically like they'll share blood and wine when this is all over. And it just makes me really happy. After the Deep Space Nine crew leaves the Rotaran, it's really clear that, like, things are not going great. Martok's like, I'd give my good eye for some fresh gach. You know, they're having not great food. It was, like, almost dead, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we get,
The Rotaran crew is picking up some crew replacements, and Martok had asked for 15 warriors, but they only got 5, unfortunately. And one of them is Alexander Rozhenko, who we know
they
as
got
Worf's
4.5.
Oh, no. Poor Alexander. I do think that Martok's, like, starting to get a little depressed. He may not.
Well, I mean,
admit
the war's
it.
Not going well. Yeah. Right? Like, you're not, it's like not getting the tools or the folks or the, that he feels like he needs. Elise, I have a question for you.
Yes, please.
Do you think everything we see on the Rotaran, they're actually in-universe speaking Klingon to each other, and we're just seeing it in English? And if that's the case, why at the end of the episode, where there's a particular ritual that we'll talk about in a bit, they actually do speak Klingon there?
I think that they're speaking Klingon to each other all the time, and we have a universal translator in our television sets. And that there is no reason or explanation for the ending scene being in Klingon. Because that is the easiest way for me to process this situation. I think it's really funny that they speak English. I just assume that they're not actually speaking English. But you're right, it makes no sense with at the end they're speaking Klingon. So I don't really have an answer for you.
So basically, I'm thinking about it too hard, is what you're saying.
Those were your words, but I wouldn't argue with them.
Those were your words, but I wouldn't argue. That's funny.
I try. So the Rotaran's next mission is to protect a convoy headed to Donatu 5, which apparently the last few ships that have gone to do this have all, like, not made it. Martok is understandably confused that why Worf never mentioned he had a kid. Like, I do think it's wild that to think that Worf joined the House of Martok and did not tell him all his secrets. And I think that it just proves that Worf loves to forget he's a dad all the time, all the damn time.
Yeah, and okay, from like a real world, like, production standpoint, I totally get that, like, Martok is acting like an audience surrogate for folks who might not have seen every episode of Next Gen or haven't seen Next Gen at all and don't know how bad of a dad Worf is. But man, in hindsight, like, in universe, the fact that Martok doesn't know, like you say, makes Worf look like an even worse dad. Even though it's, like, I don't know. It's a little, in fairness to Worf, it's a little nonsensical from an in-universe perspective, because, like, we know in his quarters and stuff, there's a picture of him and Alexander, and Martok's never asked who that was. But, again, like the aging up thing, I'll allow it.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. It's just funny and kind of adds to the lore of him being a bad dad for me.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Totally.
Yeah, there's a couple of confrontations between Alexander and Worf throughout the episode. And the first one is, like, basically Worf being like, how are your grandparents? But also, like, what the fuck are you doing here? I do appreciate that he asked about his parents and was like, and Alexander was like, they are not pleased I'm here. Every time they call, like, the Klingon Defense Force being, I don't know, did they call it the KDF in the episode, or was that just something I read on Memory Alpha to shorten it?
I mean, we've heard it called that in universe before.
I know that it's not the same thing, but it literally just makes me think of the IDF every time. So I hate it. Alexander is pretending to be a warrior. He's very much, like, trying to do it. And he's getting teased because of his upbringing. Yeah. You know, there's a fight that almost breaks out with the other younger Klingons. And, like, Worf stops it in a way that's awkward because that's not the Klingon way. That is more of a human way to act.
Yeah.
Like, Worf... Well, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, Worf keeps trying to protect Alexander, but I don't think that's, like, the best method for him to get along with the Klingons.
No, you're right. And... I do think, as much as he is capable and emotionally available to at this point, Worf does care for and does think he's protecting Alexander, but I think there's also, and whether he's cognizant of it or not, an element more about protecting himself and his own reputation, because he, like, I look bad in relation to this is my son and I've done a shitty job raising him and he's not a warrior and I'm okay with that as long as it's over there and I don't think about it, but now I'm right. Confronted with it. And, like, am I losing face with the crew as the first officer because my son's a chaotic bisexual? I don't know right. What his orientation is, but the way he's just, like, clumsy and things like that.
No, I get that. Yeah. I do think it makes Worf look worse that he's having to, like, protect him, though. Like, within their culture, I think that the protection is more embarrassing than the fact that Alexander has no idea what he's doing.
Yeah.
Like, your daddy needs to protect you is not going to win Alexander any favors.
Yeah.
Martok kind of calls Worf out on this when they're talking privately. He's like, Chitaurg would not have killed Alexander. He would have just hurt him a little bit. And you know what? Maybe that'll teach Alexander how things are done. I do like Martok is really plain with him. He says, I lost my first officer as soon as your son came on board. Like, you're not acting as you should.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like Martok this episode. Like, I think
I do too. He's my favorite. Such
giving, like, good dad vibes. Like,
I know.
Again, speaking of, like, sons we don't see.
Right.
But he's just changeling Martok.
Yeah.
Had Martok's real son in Way of the Warrior, right?
But yeah. I do also feel like Martok is, like, he is, I don't think that there is, like, the pillar of what people, like, a man or a woman should be, you know? And obviously, I'm not Klingon. Yeah. But I feel like Martok is just, like, a really a good example of the Klingon spirit and what it means to be a Klingon warrior and a man. There's a little bit of a fuck up that Alexander does. I keep wanting to call him Alex, but everyone calls him Alexander in the episode, so I just keep stumbling and saying Alexander. He basically calls and alerts everyone that there's a Jem'Hadar attack coming, and Martok and Worf rush into the bridge to see what's going on, and literally nothing is on screen, and Worf realizes that Alexander forgot to erase the battle simulation program from the sensor display. So the sensor was picking something up, but it wasn't actually there, and there's no attack happening. And the rest of the crew kind of laugh this off, and Worf is really upset about it because it's embarrassing. Your kid's an idiot, kind of. And Martok's you know what? They're all laughing. This means that they have accepted Alexander. And Worf is as the ship's fool, they don't respect him. It's hard to know at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a training. I was going to say this. You had a note, but I think you said that part already.
Oh, yeah, about the good dad stuff?
Yeah. There's a scene where Worf is attempting to train Alexander, but, Worf cannot separate his feelings about Alexander from his training. He just cannot be objective with him. And I think that someone else needs to train this kid. Yeah. At this point in their relationship, in any case.
Yeah.
Yeah, Martok has a chat with Alexander, and it's kind of what are you doing here? Just tell me what's going on. And, he really, Alexander won't open up. He tells him it's something personal that he'd rather not talk about. And Martok's well, you're being transferred to a military ship, or a military transport ship, per Worf's request. And, Alexander's really upset, but I feel like Martok's right to be he has every right to do this. He's your dad. But more importantly, he's the first officer. He can request anything he wants, pretty much.
Yeah. I did when Alexander's not opening up and he's it's a personal matter. I'm I'm watching this and I'm oh my God, this is so Worf. This is so his dad. And Martok even calls him on it. And then of course that gets under Alexander's skin because he doesn't want to be anything like his father. But it's just a personal matter. I'm oh fuck, that is such a Worf thing
and
to do.
And that shit that's not going to fly with Martok.
Yeah.
He's okay, bruh, whatever.
right.
We have our second of third talks between Worf and Alexander. And Alexander, they have a big fight, basically, because Alexander's you've never accepted me. You pushed me away. You sent me to live with your parents. It's heartbreaking because it's true. Everything he says to Worf is true.
Yeah. Yeah. And, there's an extra element of, pathos when it comes to Alexander, because, not only did his father not accept him, his mom was fucking brutally murdered.
Yeah.
Right?
It was awful.
I kind of wish, and again, it's the show, we don't have time for it, blah, 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 but dug more into why Worf acts this way. It's the idea of two things being true at once. He's being a shitty dad, but it's also because he has his unprocessed trauma.
Yeah, right? I think
Kalar's murder and the whole surprise you have a 3-year-old kid thing.
Yeah, I keep thinking, not keep thinking because it's just occurred to me. I feel if this was recent Trek, if this was Star Trek Discovery, we would have a whole story arc about Worf coming to terms with all of the stuff that happened to him. I think about, I don't know if you ever finished Star Trek Discovery, but there's a lot of stuff the Dr. Hugh goes through, and everyone on that show has, like, stuff they go through, and they, like, kind of work it out. And I think that that is one of the benefits of having a more serialized show like Discovery. But at the same time, like, serialization was kind of just starting in Trek right now. So we didn't always have, like, let's work on the feelings.
Well, and even if the show, like, was structured a little differently and, like, did that, it's, like, I find Worf frustrating because he is such a bro a lot of the time. And, like, he doesn't want to feel his feelings. And, like, they're hard and they're difficult. And, like, yeah, that's the messiness of life. But we see the harm that, like, the way Worf's emotional immaturity does to others, like Alexander, in this episode.
Yeah. Right? Yes. So. Agree. Oh no, there's a real Jem'Hadar attack that's gonna happen now.
Are we sure it's real?
Well, Alexander is, I don't think, the one that called it out, so yes, I'm pretty sure it's real. But it gives Alexander a chance to kind of prove himself. There's a plasma leak on the ship, and Alexander and Chitark work together to seal it off. Although, in doing so, Alexander accidentally locks himself inside a corridor, which is very silly.
In the tool shed, when he puts it away after they've fixed the things.
Yeah, it's really funny. But I do think, like, him acting quickly to volunteer to fix the plasma leak and, like, work on something that he actually, like, may have knowledge about makes Worf realize that he is not a child anymore, and he should give him a little bit more leeway to prove himself.
Yeah, he's a grown-up 8-year-old.
He's a grown-up 8-year-old, and he's gonna stand by him. And then Worf says something that makes you want to punch him. And you will teach me what I need to know to be a father. And I'm like, Worf, like, read a parenting book. This is not Alexander's responsibility. Please don't burden your kid with how to parent him.
Yeah, maybe, like a slight tweak would have been, instead of a father, to be, like, your father, what you need from me.
Yes.
And, like,
yes. Like, but also still, like, Worf, you're the older adult. You need to be the one to, like, make that bridge and be like, Alexander, how are you feeling? What do you need from me?
Yeah. Yeah.
At the end of the episode, Alexander joins the House of Martok in the ritual ceremony that we referenced earlier that actually takes place in Klingon. There's a scene where they all, like, cut their hands.
Yeah.
And apparently in the UK, some of that was cut.
Yeah, it was, because the show was thought to be primarily aimed at teenagers.
Yeah.
And basically, like, with whatever, like, standards code or whatever at the time there were, because the blood mixing and the cut that, like, folks might replicate it. And then
they didn't want a bunch of kids going around becoming blood brothers or whatever.
Yeah, but then also, like, particularly it relating to, like, you know, the contraction of HIV.
Right.
Is interesting to me, and such, like, we're late 90s at this time, right?
Like, yep.
Was it 97? Mm-hmm. But, like, still, that just being around, that feels very of its time.
Yes.
Right?
AIDS panic. I didn't mean to imply that AIDS is not a problem.
No. I know.
I'm more saying that for the audience. I'm just saying not nonsensical things. I think I liked this episode more on rewatch this morning than I did when I watched it the first time the other day. I mean, obviously I watched it before and didn't remember, but this episode grew on me slightly this morning.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some interesting things once you kind of, like, dig below the surface, but as there often is, but you have to kind of scratch it a bit, right?
That's what we're here for, to scratch at it.
All right. Our deep and irreverent thoughts. Well, now it's time for the Altair Water Thirst Quencher. Altair Water first being mentioned in the context of Star Trek by Dr. McCoy in Star Trek 3. Also, a possible reference to Alta from Altair 4 on the MGM film Forbidden Planet, which is playing at the Metro Cinema in Edmonton coming up.
Are you going
to
go?
I'm going to try and see it. I'm going to try to on the big screen.
Like, you really should. Home, that is wonderful. Yeah. I would love that. We watched, this is not a movie that is related to what we were saying, but we watched Bonnie and Clyde last night, and I would, like, love to watch that movie on a big screen. I wish. Ah, so good. I am thirsting for Dax and Worf at the beginning of this episode. Like, they're doing their, like, heavy breathing when Sisko calls, and I'm just, and she's being so bratty towards him. It's very hot for me.
If I had a nominee, it would probably be that one as well. I don't know. There's just something about bad dads that doesn't really get me going.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I do have a nominee for the most Star Trek thing of the episode, and it's Miles talking about Federation field rations.
And for me, it's the fact that root beer is the only human drink any non-humans seem to know about.
No, but I know. As that scene was going on, he's like, would you prefer, I'm like, you're going to say root beer. You're going to say root beer. And then Chitog says root beer, and I'm like, yep, there it is.
It's very funny and did not disappoint.
So, perfect. Well, until next time, Elise, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
Yes, you can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find links to my True Blood podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's Bangers with a Z or Z. You can find links to my James Bond podcast, Pay Attention 007, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Pay Attention 007 Pod and at MovieJawn.com. That's J-A-W-N.
Awesome. And you can catch me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Matty Hugh, MattyHugh. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at PodRace. And you can email us at PodRace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and to DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye. When we